Welcome to Computing Lives, a podcast from the IEEE Annals of the History of Computing. Though we often think that the computer was an invention of the Second World War, we repeatedly find people and institutions that were thinking about computing problems in the 1930s. That issue is explored in today's podcast, which is called The Emergence of a Computing Science Research Center at Cambridge. During the 1930s, the ever-increasing amount of computation generated by theoretical and applied scientific research led Cambridge professor John Leonard Jones, who was then the Plummer Professor of Theoretical Chemistry, to consider new methods of computation. The work of the Theoretical Chemistry Group at Cambridge University, which was led by Leonard Jones, including the calculation of molecular wave functions. By 1935, one of the group's main limitations was the complexity of performing the required numerical work using desk calculating machines. The need for mechanical computation was becoming increasingly obvious to the group. In 1934, when our story begins, Douglas Hartree, who was professor of applied mathematics at Manchester University, as well as Arthur Porter, had constructed a Mechano, a popular construction toy, model differential analyzer. Leonard Jones was aware of Hartree's work on the model differential analyzer, and he considered that such a device would be of value to his own theoretical chemistry research group. He contacted Hartree, who was more than happy to give every assistance, and a model differential analyzer was built at Cambridge University in 1935 by J.B. Bratt under Leonard Jones's directions. Despite being largely constructed from the toy Mechano parts, the Cambridge Model Differential Analyzer was a practical and a useful computing tool. Leonard Jones delegated the day-to-day running and maintenance of the machine to Mr. Bratt. 2 years later, in March 1936, Morris V. Wilkes, who was then a research student at the Cavendish Laboratory Radio Group, attended a lecture on differential analyzers given by Hartree. The existence of the differential analyzer had been previously unknown to Wilkes, but he immediately saw how such a device could solve a differential equation which arose from his own work. He asked Leonard Jones if he might make use of the machine. Leonard Jones agreed. So, with Bratt's assistance, Wilkes successfully used this model differential analyzer for his own research computations. At the end of 1936, Wilkes replaced Bratt in the job of maintaining the model differential analyzer and providing technical assistance to other users. Under this arrangement, Wilkes could use the differential analyzer for his own research. During his guardianship of this model differential analyzer, Wilkes not only assisted others, but also added an additional integrator to the machine. The model differential analyzer demonstrated the potential value of a more accurate full-scale device, and Leonard Jones began to muster support for the installation of such a machine at Cambridge. Significantly, Leonard Jones did not seek the installation of a full-sized differential analyzer for use by the theoretical chemistry group alone. He was instead interested in establishing a computing laboratory for the benefit of all scientists at Cambridge University. The principal machine of the laboratory was to be a full-size differential analyzer. The first step towards establishing a computing laboratory, and hence installing that full-scale differential analyzer, was to gain the support for the idea from other university departments. By the spring of 1936, there was considerable enthusiasm from science departments for the creation of a computing laboratory to which they had easy access. The Faculty Board of Mathematics expressed the opinion that the time had come when it is essential in the interests of the physical sciences in Cambridge to develop a computing laboratory. The administrators of Cambridge University gave formal approval on February 20th, 1937, for the creation of a computational laboratory. The laboratory was to be called the Mathematical Laboratory, and it was to be equipped with that 8-integrator differential analyzer, the model differential analyzer that Wilkes had been using, a device called the Maylock machine, which was an analog calculating device which had been built to solve linear simultaneous equations, and also a variety of desk calculators. Leonard Jones was appointed part-time director of the mathematical laboratory for a period of 5 years, beginning on October 1, 1937, and Wilkes was appointed as university demonstrator, which is a post approximately equivalent to an assistant professor in the United States. Wilkes' initial brief was to supervise the construction of a new professional differential analyzer, and also to visit Manchester University to gain experience on the differential analyzer there. One difficulty that had been expressed throughout the various reports supporting the establishment of the mathematical laboratory was its location. Eventually, it was decided to use the north wing of the old anatomy school, which needed some renovation to make it suitable for its new purpose. The full-size differential analyzer was an order from Metropolitan Vickers, a Manchester-based electrical engineering company. But by 1938, as the threat of war grew, the company began to take on more and more government contracts, which inevitably slowed down the work on the Cambridge machine. The Maylock machine was situated in the engineering department, and the desk machines were scattered throughout the university. By August 1939, with war inevitable, Leonard Jones formed an exterior ballistics research team attached to the exterior ballistics department of the Ordnance Board, responsible to the newly established Ministry of Supply. The Ministry of Supply was created on the outbreak of the war and combined the supply functions and therefore the research functions of the War Office. Leonard Jones negotiated with the university authorities on behalf of the Ministry of Supply for the lease of the mathematical laboratory as well as its equipment. The exterior ballistics department wished to use the full-size differential analyzer, the delivery of which was suspected to be imminent, to perform ballistics calculations. Leonard Jones began to build up a research team which continued throughout the war to do just this work. However, the laboratory, much like the Aberdeen Proving Ground Laboratory in Maryland of the United States, soon discovered that the precision of the differential analyzer was far too low for routine trajectory calculations. Instead, the machine was used for experimental work on guns and rockets, high explosives research, and sound ranging. By 1942, the work of the research team kept the differential analyzer operational for 12 hours a day. Having established the exterior ballistics research team at Cambridge, Leonard Jones went on to become actively involved in several Ministry of Supply committees on related topics. In 1942, he was appointed chief superintendent of armament research, Ministry of Supply, and left Cambridge. However, Leonard Jones still continued to direct the work of the exterior ballistics research team based at the Cambridge Mathematical Laboratory. In early 1945, the war in Europe was drawing to a close. Consequently, the Cambridge University authorities began urgent post-war planning. In February 45, with the end of the war about 3 months away, Leonard Jones, still chief superintendent of armament research, Ministry of Supply, met with members of the general board of Cambridge University to plan the future of the Cambridge Mathematical Laboratory. From his position within the Ministry of Supply, Leonard Jones was aware of important new developments being made in computing technology, and he considered that the post-war mathematical laboratory should contribute to this work. However, he also wanted the laboratory to teach practical computing techniques and to provide the university computing service that had originally been planned. In August 45, Leonard Jones accepted the post of Director General of Scientific Research, Defense, of the Ministry of Supply. Although he remained Plummer Professor of Theoretical Chemistry, he informed the university that he no longer wished to continue as Director of the Mathematical Laboratory. As a result, Wilkes was appointed Acting Director and returned to Cambridge at the beginning of September 1945, with the not inconsiderable task of establishing the laboratory on a peacetime basis. Wilkes's discussion with the Faculty of Mathematics at this time also stated that the work of the laboratory would primarily be research into new computing machines and new numerical methods, although teaching and computing service should be provided. When Morris Wilkes returned to Cambridge, there were two immediate tasks to be undertaken before the wider issue of research into new computing machines and methods could be addressed. The first of these tasks was to repossess the laboratory from the Ministry of Supply. The second was to increase the number of desk machines in the laboratory. A third task, to establish numerical analysis teaching, was also considered important but could not be addressed until Wilkes had fully equipped the laboratory at his disposal. Because the Ministry of Supply had possession of the laboratory by a lease agreement rather than by a requisition, it was obliged to comply with the university's requests to leave and vacated the laboratory's presence on January 5, 1946. In the meantime, Wilkes had not been idle. He had recruited a workshop assistant for the differential analyzer and had visited John Wormersley at the National Physical Laboratory Mathematics Division and Robert Fairthorne at the Royal Aircraft Establishment, seeking practical help and advice about setting up a computing center. Wilkes also visited Leslie John Comrie at the Scientific Computing Service. Comrie was a well-known expert on numerical computation and ran a commercial computing service following a career as superintendent of the Nautical Almanac Office. Comrie sold Wilkes books and mathematical tables for the laboratory's library, desk calculators, and a second-hand national accounting machine to supplement the equipment already installed in the laboratory. Wilkes also recruited Cara Mumford to the laboratory as a computer, as the operators of desk calculating machines were then known. By February 1946, Wilkes was settled as director of the mathematics laboratory. He had possession of the premises and had begun to equip the building. However, Wilkes had no intention of running a computing service bureau. In his view, the laboratory's role was to provide equipment with sufficient advice and technical assistance for scientists within Cambridge to do their own work. Wilkes fully reported on the current position of the laboratory in terms of equipment available to the university members. After discussing the obvious function of the mathematical laboratory, he spent nearly four pages of his report discussing development of new computing machines. These four pages were nearly half of his presentation. The section opened prophetically. There is a big field here, especially in the application of electronic methods which have made great progress during the war. And I think Cambridge should take part in trying to catch up some of the lead that the Americans have made in this subject. From his contacts, Wilkes knew that much work had been done during the war on electronic digital computing, but at this time, hard technical information was not readily available to him in any detail. Instead, his report proposed the development of an automatic sequence calculating machine using electronic techniques. With the Cambridge Mathematical Laboratory operational in terms of being set up as a university computing center, Wilkes was in a position to initiate computing machine research. The key catalysts were the physicist Douglas Hartree, John von Neumann's famous paper, the draft report on the EDVAC, and Morris's Wilkes trip to the United States. That winter, Wilkes had a chance to see a copy of von Neumann's famous paper. He recognized it at once as the real thing, he said, and from that time never had any real doubt as to the way computing development would go. Following the opportunity to read the paper, Wilkes received an invitation to attend a series of lectures on the theory and techniques for the design of electronic computers given at the Moore School of Engineering at the University of Pennsylvania from July 8 to August 31, 1946. Wilkes jumped at the chance to go, and although he arrived late, owing to problems with the post-war shipping, he was in time for a detailed description of the ENIAC and a discussion of the EDVAC principle. By the time Wilkes returned to Cambridge in October 1946, he was determined to build a stored program computer, a project which was well within the province of the mathematical laboratory. The laboratory had sufficient funds to get the project started, without Wilkes needing to apply to anyone for permission or for funding. The next few years were spent in intense activity, setting up an electronics laboratory and building the EDSAC, the Electronic Delay Storage Automated Calculator. The emphasis of the work at the mathematics laboratory soon shifted toward computing machinery research. But nonetheless, this was not the only function of the laboratory. A desk machine computing service was theoretically maintained throughout the period that the EDSAC was under construction, but it was not used to any significant degree. When the EDSAC became fully operational, the desk machine computing service was dissolved, and the mathematical laboratory provided the digital computing service as its primary service. The period from 1947 to 1949 was one of intense activity for Wilkes. In the autumn of 1947, as construction of the EDSAC began, he took on a group of researchers, an instrument maker, an electronic technician, and others to help develop the machinery. He also reached an agreement with J. Lyons and Company, which provided not only funding, £3,000, but also an assistant. Wilkes later recruited others to help with documentation, to do research service, and to help build the laboratory. As work on the EDSAC was progressing, Wilkes felt that it was important for the mathematics laboratory to begin the common practice of many academic institutions of holding informal seminars. The regular Thursday afternoon seminar that Wilkes established attracted attention from both inside and outside Cambridge. This meant that the seminars were more than just an opportunity for interested Cambridge academics to keep abreast of the work taking place in the mathematical laboratory. The seminars also began the process of disseminating information about computing machine development throughout Britain. The EDSAC performed its first automatic calculation on May 6, 1949. For Wilkes, it was an outstanding achievement, but just as important was the fact that he had created a young and vibrant research team at the Cambridge Mathematics Laboratory. The construction of the EDSAC was just the beginning of a continuing program of computing science research and teaching. The atmosphere was one of urgency and commitment, coupled with a knowledge that their work, computer science research as it is known today, was breaking new ground. You've been listening to Computing Lives. This podcast is based on an essay which was written by Mary Kowarkin and was published in Volume 14, Number 4 of the Annals of the History of Computing. More about the Annals and the other publications of the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. Click on the Publications tab and go to Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, you can always send them to podcasts@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.